This is Audible.
Harper Audio presents The School for Good and Evil, Number 2, A World Without Princes, by Soman Chainani, performed by Polly Lee. Part 1. Chapter 1. Sophie Makes a Wish. There is an uneasiness that remains after your best friend tries to kill you. But, as Agatha gazed out at her and Sophie's golden statues towering over the sun-speckled square, she swallowed it away. "I don't know why it has to be a musical," she said, sneezing from the carnations on her pink dress. "No sweating in your costumes," Sophie barked at a boy struggling in a ferocious plaster doghead, while the girl roped to him stumbled around in her own cuddly doghead. Sophie caught two boys, labelled Chadwick and Ruven, trying to swap outfits. "No switching schools either."
"But I want to be an ever," Ruven groused and pulled at his dumpy black tunic.
"My wig itches," mewled Beatrix, clawing her blonde hairpiece. "Mummy won't know it's me,"
whined a boy in the schoolmaster's shiny silver mask.
"And no sulking about parts," Sophie boomed, branding Dot on the blacksmith's daughter before stuffing two chocolate ice pops in her hands. "You need to gain 20 pounds by next week."
"You said it'd be small," Agatha said, eyeing a boy teetering on a ladder as he painted two familiar green eyes on the massive theatre marquee. "Something tasteful for the anniversary."
"Is every boy in this town a tenner?" Sophie squawked, inspecting the males with these very same eyes. "Surely someone's voice has changed. Surely someone can play Tedros, the most handsome, charming prince in the..."
She turned to find red-haired, buck-toothed Radley in tight breeches puffing his chest. Sophie gagged and stamped him haut. "This doesn't seem small," Agatha said, louder, watching two girls pull the canvas off a ticket booth with 20 neon Sophie faces silk-screened across it. "And it doesn't seem tasteful."
"Lights!" Sophie called to two boys suspended from ropes.
Agatha spun from the blinding detonation. Through fingers, she peeked up at the velvet curtain behind them, embedded with 1,000 white-hot bulbs spelling out, "Curses the Musical, starring, written, directed and produced by Sophie."
"Is this too dull for the finale?" Sophie said, whirling to Agatha in a midnight blue ball gown with delicate gold leaves, a ruby pendant around her neck, and a tiara of blue orchids.
"That reminds me, can you sing harmony?" Agatha swelled like a tick.
"Have you lost your mind? You said it'd be a tribute to the kidnapped children, not some fairground burlesque. I can't act. I can't sing, and here we are having a dress rehearsal for a vanity show that doesn't even have a script."
"What is that?"
She pointed at the sash of red crystals across Sophie's dress. "Ball Queen." Sophie stared at her.
"You don't expect me to tell our story as it happened, do you?"
Agatha scowled.
"Oh, Agatha. If we don't celebrate ourselves, who else will?"
Sophie moaned, looking out at the giant amphitheatre.
"We're the Gavaldon Cursebreakers, The schoolmaster slayers, larger than life, greater than legend. So where's our palace? Where's our slaves? On the anniversary of our kidnapping from this odious town, they should adore us. They should worship us. They should bow down instead of trolling around with fat, badly dressed widows.
Her voice thundered across empty wooden seats. She turned to find her friend, studying her. The elders gave him permission, didn't they? Said Agatha. Sophie's face darkened. She spun quickly and started handing sheet music to the cast. When is it? Agatha asked. Sophie didn't answer. Sophie, when is it?
The day after the show, Sophie said, sprucing the garlands on a giant altar set piece. But that might change once they see the encore.
Why? What's in the encore?
I'm fine about it, Aggie. I've made my peace.
Sophie, what's in the encore?
He's a grown man, free to make his own decisions.
And this show has nothing to do with trying to stop your father's wedding.
Sophie twirled. Why would you ever think that?
Agatha glared at the fat, homeless hag, slouched in a veil under the altar, stamped Honora. Sophie shoved Agatha music.
If I were you, I'd be learning how to sing.
When they returned from the woods 9 months before, the hubbub had been frightening. For 200 years, the schoolmaster had kidnapped children from Gavaldon to his school for good and evil. But after so many children lost forever, so many families torn apart, two girls had found their way back. People wanted to kiss them, touch them, build statues for them, as if they were gods fallen to earth. To satisfy demand, the Council of Elders suggested they hold supervised autograph signings in the church after Sunday services. The questions never changed.
Did they torture you? Are you sure the curse is broken? Did you see my son?
Sophie offered to endure these on her own, but to her surprise, Agatha always showed. Indeed, in those first months, Agatha did daily interviews for the town scroll, let Sophie dress her up and slather her with makeup, and politely endured the young children her friend loathed.
Totems of disease,
Sophie grumbled, dabbing her nostrils with eucalyptus before signing another storybook. She noticed Agatha smile at a boy as she autographed his copy of King Arthur.
Since when do you like children?
Sophie growled. Since they beg to see mother when they're sick now, said Agatha, flashing lipstick stains on her teeth. Never had so many patients in her life. But by summer, the crowd had thinned. It was Sophie's idea to do posters. The Curse Breakers, live this Sunday, free kiss with autograph. Agatha gaped at the sign on the church door.
Free kiss? On their storybooks, Sophie said, puckering garishly red lips into a pocket mirror.
That's not what it sounds like, said Agatha, pulling at the clingy green dress Sophie had loaned her. Pink had noticeably disappeared from her friend's closet after they returned, presumably because it reminded her of her time as a bald, toothless witch.
Look, we're old news, Agatha said, yanking at the dress's straps again.
Time to go back to normal. Like everyone else.
Maybe it should just be me this week.
Sophie's eyes flicked up from the mirror.
Perhaps they sense your lack of enthusiasm.
But no one except Smelly Radley showed that Sunday, or the next week, when Sophie's posters hawked an intimate gift with every autograph, or the next, when she promised a private dinner, too. By the fall, the missing signs in the square had come down. The children had shoved their storybooks in closets, and Mr. Deauville put a last days sign in his shop window, for no new fairy tales had come from the woods for him to sell. Now the girls were just two more fossils of the curse. Even Sophie's father had stopped treading gently. On Halloween, he told his daughter he had received the elders' permission to marry Honora. He never asked for Sophie's. As she hurried from rehearsal through a hard, ugly rain, Sophie glowered at her once shining statue, spotted and runny with bird droppings. She had worked so hard for it. A week of snail egg facials and cucumber juice fasts so the sculptor would get her just right. And now, here it was, a toilet for pigeons. She glanced back at her painted face, beaming from the distant theatre marquee, and gritted her teeth. The show would remind her father who came first. The show would remind them all. As she splashed out of the square toward soddy cottage lanes, trails of smoke wafted from chimneys, and Sophie knew what each family was having for dinner. Breaded pork with mushroom gravy in Wilhelm's house, beef and potato cream soup in Belle's, bacon lentils and pickled yams in Sabrina's, the food her father loved and never could have. Good. Let him starve, for all she cared. As she walked up the lane to her own house, Sophie inhaled for the smell of a cold, empty kitchen, a smell that reminded her father of what he'd lost. Only now, the kitchen didn't smell empty at all. Sophie inhaled again, a smell of meat and milk, and felt herself running to the door. She threw it open. Honora hacked into raw pork ribs. "Sophie," she panted, wiping plump hands, "I had to close at Bartleby's. I could use some help." Sophie stared through her. "Where's my father?" Honora tried to fix her bushy, flower-crusted hair. "Putting up the tent with the boys. He thought it might be nice if we all have dinner together." "Tent?" Sophie charged for the back door. "Now!" She barreled into the garden. In gusty rain, the widow's two boys each manned a roped-down stake, while Stefan tried to loop the billowing white tent around a third. But just as Stefan succeeded, the tent ripped away, burying him and the two boys beneath it. Sophie could hear them giggling before her father poked his head from under the canvas. "Just what we need. A fourth." "Why are you putting up the tent?" Sophie said, ice cold. "The wedding is next week." Stefan stood tall and cleared his throat.
"It's tomorrow."
"Tomorrow?" Sophie went white. "This tomorrow? The one after today?"
"Honora said we should do it before your show," Stefan said, running a hand through a newly grown beard. "We don't want to distract from it."
Sophie felt sick. "But how can—"
"Don't worry about us. We announced the date change at church. And Jacob and Adam here will have the tent up in no time. How was rehearsal?"
He hugged the six-year-old to his brawny flank.
"Jacob said he could see the lights from our porch."
"Me too,"
said eight-year-old Adam, hugging his other side. Stefan kissed their heads.
"Who'd have thought I'd have two little princes?" he whispered.
Sophie watched her father, heart in her throat.
"So, come on. Tell us what's in your show," Stefan said,
smiling up at her. But Sophie suddenly didn't care about her show at all. Dinner was a handsome roast with perfectly cooked broccoli, cucumber salad, and a flourless blueberry tart, but she didn't touch any of it. She sat rigid, glaring at Honora across the cramped table as forks speared and clinked. "Eat," Stefan prodded her. Next to him, Honora rubbed her neck wattle, avoiding Sophie's stare. "If she doesn't like it..." "You made what she likes," Stefan said, eyes on Sophie. "Eat." Sophie didn't. Clinks petered to silence.
"Can I have her pork?" Adam said.
"You and my mother were friends, weren't you?" Sophie said to Honora. The widow choked on her meat. Stefan scowled at Sophie and opened his mouth to retort, but Honora grabbed his wrist. She dabbed at dry lips with a dirty napkin. "Best friends," she rasped with a smile, and swallowed again. "For a very long time." Sophie froze over.
"I wonder what came between you."
Honora's smile vanished, and she peered down at her plate. Sophie's eyes stayed locked on her. Stefan's fork clanked against the table. "Why don't you help Honora in the shop after school?" Sophie waited for Adam to answer him, then saw her father, still looking at her.
"Me?"
Sophie blanched. "Help her?" "Bartleby said my wife could use an extra hand," Stefan pushed. "Wife." That's all Sophie heard. Not thief. Not tramp. "Wife." "After the wedding and the show is over," he added, "get you settled into normal life." Sophie spun to Honora, expecting her to be as shocked, but she was just anxiously slurping cucumbers through dry lips.
"Father, you want me to...
Sophie couldn't get the words out.
"Churn... butter?"
"Build some strength in those stick arms," her father said between bites as Jacob and Adam compared biceps.
"But I'm famous," Sophie shrieked. "I have fans. I have a statue. I can't work. Not with her."
"Then perhaps you should find somewhere else to live." Stefan picked a bone clean. "As long as you're in this family, you'll contribute, or the boys would be happy to have your room." Sophie gasped. "Now, eat," he spat. So sharply, she had to obey.
As he watched Agatha slip on her old, saggy black dress, Reaper growled suspiciously, sucking on a few trout bones across the leaky room.
"See? Same old Agatha."
She slammed the trunk on Sophie's borrowed clothes, slid it near the door, and kneeled to pet her bald, wrinkled cat.
"So now you can be nice again,"
Reaper hissed.
"It's me," Agatha said, trying to pet him. "I haven't changed a bit."
Reaper scratched her and trundled away. Agatha rubbed the fresh mark on her hand between others barely healed. She flopped onto her bed while Reaper curled up in a mouldy green corner, as far away from her as he could. She rolled over and hugged her pillow.
"I'm happy."
She listened to rain slosh against the straw roof and spurt through a hole into her mother's black cauldron.
"Home, sweet home."
Clink, 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 went the rain. "Sophie and me." She stared at the blank, cracked wall. Clink, clink, clink. Like a sword in a sheath, rubbing against a belt buckle. Clink, clink, clink. Her chest started pounding. Her blood burning like lava, and she knew it was happening again. Clink, clink, clink. The black of the cauldron became the black of his boots, the straw of the ceiling, the gold of his hair, the sky through the window, the blue in his eyes. In her arms, the pillow became tanned muscles and flesh.
"Some help, dear,"
a voice trilled. Agatha jolted awake, gripping her sweat-stained pillow. She lurched off the bed and opened the door to see her mother lugging two baskets, one teeming with stinky roots and leaves, the other with dead tadpoles, cockroaches, and lizards. "What in the world?"
"So you can finally teach me some potions from school,"
Callis chimed, eyes bulging, and plunked a basket in Agatha's hands.
"Not as many patients today. We have time to brew."
"I told you I can't do magic any more," Agatha snapped, closing the door behind them. "Our fingers don't glow here."
"Why won't you tell me anything that happened?"
her mother asked, picking her oily dome of black hair.
"The least you could do is show me a wart potion."
"Look, I put it all behind me."
"Lizards are better fresh, dear. What can we make with those?"
"I forgot all that stuff.
They'll go bad. Stop!"
Her mother stiffened. "Please," Agatha begged. "I don't want to talk about school." Gently, Callis took the basket from her.
"When you came home, I'd never been so happy."
She looked into her daughter's eyes.
"But part of me worries what you gave up."
Agatha stared down at her black clump shoes as her mother towed the baskets into the kitchen.
"You know how I feel about waste," Callis sighed. "Let's hope our bowels can handle a lizard stew."
As Agatha chopped onions by torchlight, she listened to her mother hum off-key like she did every night. Once upon a time, she had loved their graveyard haven, their lonely routines. She put down the knife. "Mother, how do you know if you've found Ever After?" Said Callis, bony hand scraping a few roaches into the cauldron. "The people in a fairy tale, I mean."
"It should say so, dear."
Her mother nodded at an open storybook peeking from under Agatha's bed. Agatha looked down at its last page, a blonde prince and raven-haired princess kissing at their wedding, framed by an enchanted castle. The end. But what if two people can't see their storybook? She gazed at the princess in her prince's arms. How do they know if they're happy?
If they have to ask, they probably aren't, said her mother, jabbing a roach that wouldn't drown.
Agatha's eyes stayed on the prince a moment longer. She snapped the storybook shut and tossed it in the fire under the cauldron. About time we got rid of these like everyone else. She resumed chopping in the corner, faster than before.
Are you all right, dear?
Callis said, hearing sniffles. Agatha dabbed at her eyes. Onions. The rain had gone, but a harsh autumn wind raked across the cemetery, lit by two torches over the gates that clung to skipping flames. As she approached the grave, her calves locked and her heart banged in her ears, begging her to stay away. Sweat seeped down her back as she kneeled in the weeds and mud, her eyes closed. She had never looked. Never. With a deep breath, Sophie opened her eyes. She could barely make out an eroded butterfly in the headstone above the words, "Loving wife and mother." Two smaller gravestones, both unmarked, flanked her mother's like wings. Fingers covered by white mittens, she picked moss out of the cracks in one, overgrown from the years of neglect. As she tore away the mould, her soiled mittens found deeper grooves in the rock, smooth and deliberate. There was something carved in the slab. She peered closer. "Sophie?" She turned to see Agatha approach in a tattered black coat, balancing a drippy candle on a saucer. "My mother saw you from the window." Agatha crouched next to her and laid the flame in front of the graves. Sophie didn't say anything for a long while. "He thought it was her fault," she said at last, gazing at the two unmarked headstones. "Two boys, both born dead. How else could he explain it?" She watched a blue butterfly flutter out of the darkness and nestle into the carving on her mother's decayed gravestone. "All the doctors said she couldn't have more children, even your mother." Sophie paused and smiled faintly at the blue butterfly. "One day it happened. She was so sick, no one thought it could last, but her belly still grew. The miracle child, the elders called it. Father said he'd name him Philip." Sophie turned to Agatha. "Only you can't call a girl Philip." Sophie paused, cheekbones hardening. "She loved me. No matter how weak I had left her, no matter how many times she watched him walk to her friend's house and disappear inside." Sophie fought the tears as long as she could. "Her friend, Agatha. Her best friend. How could he?" She cried bitterly into her dirty mittens. Agatha looked down and didn't say a word. "I watched her die, Aggie. Broken and betrayed." Sophie turned from the grave, red-faced. "Now he'll have everything he wanted." "You can't stop him," Agatha said, touching her. Sophie recoiled. "And let him get away with it." "What choice do you have?" "You think that wedding will happen?" Sophie spat. "Watch." "Sophie, he should be the one dead." Sophie flushed with blood. "Him and his little princes. Then I'd be happy in this prison." Her face was so horrible that Agatha froze. For the first time since they returned, she glimpsed the deadly witch inside her friend, yearning to unleash. Sophie saw the fear in Agatha's eyes. "I'm sorry," she stammered, turning away. I don't know what happened." Her face melted to shame. The witch was gone. "I miss her, Aggie," Sophie whispered, trembling. "I know we have our happy ending, but I still miss my mother." Agatha hesitated, then touched her friend's shoulder. Sophie gave in to her, and Agatha held her as she sobbed. "I wish I could see her again," Sophie wept. "I'd do anything. Anything." The crooked tower clock tolled 10 times down the hill, but loud, doleful creaks thickened between each one. In each other's arms, the two girls watched the hunch silhouette of old Mr. Deauville as he wheeled a cart past the clock with the last of his closed-down shop. Every few paces he stopped, labouring under the weight of his forgotten storybooks, until his shadow disappeared around the corner and the creaks faded away.
"I just don't want to end like her, alone and forgotten," Sophie breathed.
She turned to Agatha, trying to smile.
"But my mother didn't have a friend like you, did she? You gave up a prince just for us to be together. To think I could make someone happy like that."
Her eyes misted.
"I don't deserve you, Agatha. I really don't. After all I've done."
Agatha was still quiet.
"Someone good would let this marriage happen, wouldn't they?"
Sophie pressed her softly.
"Someone as good as you?"
"It's late," Agatha said, standing up. She held out her hand. Sophie took it limply.
"And I still have to find a dress for the wedding."
Agatha managed to smile. "See, good after all."
"Least I can do is look better than the bride," Sophie said, swishing ahead.
Agatha snorted and grabbed the torch off the gate. "Wait, I'll walk you home."
"How lovely," Sophie said, not stopping. "I can smell more of that onion soup you had for dinner."
Lizard and onion soup, actually.
"I really don't know how we're friends."
Through the groaning gate, the two slipped side by side, torches lighting up their long shadows across overgrown weeds. As they waded down the Emerald Hill and out of sight, a gust flew back through the cemetery, igniting a flame on a candle, dripping onto its mud-stained saucer. The flame grew over a blue butterfly, settled curiously on a grave, then stoked brighter, long enough to illuminate the carvings on the two unmarked graves beside it, a swan on each. One white, the other black. With a roar, the wind lashed between them and blew the candle out. Chapter 2. Agatha Makes a Wish Too. Blood. It smelled blood. "Eat." Smashing through trees, the beast hunted their scent, grunting and slobbering on all fours. Claws and feet pounded the dirt, faster, faster, shredding vines and branches, bounding over rocks, until at last it could hear their breaths and see the trail of red. One of them was hurt. "Eat." Through a long, dark, hollow trunk it slunk, licking up the blood, smelling their terror. The beast took its time, for they had nowhere to go, and soon it heard their whimpers. Bit by bit they came into view, silhouetted in moonlight, trapped between the end of the log and a thick patch of briars. The older boy, wounded and pale, clutched the younger to his chest. The beast swept them both up and held the boys as they cried. Snuggled in briars, the beast rocked them gently until the boys stopped weeping and knew the beast was good. Soon the boys breathed heavier against the beast's black breast, nestling deeper into its arms, hugging them tighter, harder, bonier, until the boys gasped awake and saw Sophie's bloody smile. Sophie flung up from bed and knocked into her bedside candle, splattering lavender wax all over the wall. She whirled to the mirror and saw herself, bald, toothless, pockmarked with warts. "Help!" She choked, closing her eyes. She opened them, and the witch was no longer there. Her beautiful face stared back at her. Panicked, Sophie checked her shivering white skin for warts, wiping away the cold film of sweat. "I'm good," she calmed herself when she found none. But her hands wouldn't stop shaking, her mind racing, unable to shake that beast, the beast she'd killed in a world far away, the beast that still haunted her dreams. She thought of her rage in the graveyard, Agatha's petrified face. "You'll never be good," the schoolmaster had warned. Sophie's mouth went dry. She'd smile at the wedding. She'd work at Bartleby's. She'd eat the widow's meat and buy toys for her sons. She'd be happy here, just like Agatha. Anything to not be a witch again. "I'm good," she repeated into silence. The schoolmaster had to be wrong. She'd saved Agatha's life, and Agatha had saved hers. They were home together, the riddle solved, the schoolmaster dead. The storybook closed. "Definitely good," Sophie assured herself, snuggling back into her pillow. But she could still taste blood. The fog and winds of the night cleared to a blinding sun, so strong for November that the day seemed blessed for love. Every wedding in Gavaldon was a public occasion, but on this Friday the shops were all closed and the square deserted, for Stefan was a popular man. Under a white garden tent behind his house, the entire town mingled over cherry punch and plum wine as three fiddlers strummed in the corner, exhausted from playing a funeral the night before. Agatha wasn't sure if her dumpy black smock was appropriate attire for a wedding, but it suited her mood. She'd woken up miserable and couldn't put a finger on why. "Sophie needs me to be happy," she told herself as she tromped down the hill, but by the time she joined the crowd in the garden, her frown was a scowl. She needed to snap out of it, or she'd make Sophie even more depressed. A flash of pink surged through the crowd and bear-hugged her into a poofy, ruffled gown. "Thank you for being here on our special day," Sophie cooed. Agatha coughed. "I'm so happy for them, aren't you?" Sophie mooned, dabbing non-existent tears. "It'll be such a thrill, having a new mother, two brothers, and going to the shop each morning to churn..." She gulped. "Butter?" Agatha gaped at Sophie, back in her favourite dress. "You're pink. Again." "Like my loving good heart," her friend breathed, stroking pink-ribboned braids. Agatha blinked. "Did they put toadstools in the punch?" "Sophie!" Both girls turned and saw Jacob, Adam, and Stefan trying to fix crooked blue tulip garlands over the altar at the front of the tent. Standing on pumpkins to reach, the boys beckoned her with waves. "Sweet little munchkins, aren't they?" Sophie smiled. "I could just eat them both Agatha saw her friend's green eyes chill with fear. Then it was gone, and the only traces left were the bruised circles beneath them. Nightmare scars. She'd seen them on Sophie before. "Sophie, it's me," Agatha said quietly. "You don't have to pretend." Sophie shook her head. "You and me, Aggie. That's all I need to be good," she said, voice shaky. She clasped Agatha's arms and looked deep into her friend's dark eyes. "As long as we keep the witch inside me dead, everything else I can bear if I try." She gripped Agatha tighter and turned to the altar.
"I'm coming, boys," she shouted, and with a strained smile swept off to help her new family.
Instead of feeling touched, Agatha felt even more miserable. "What's wrong with me?" Her mother came up beside her and handed her a glass of punch, which she downed in one gulp.
"Added a few glowworms," Callis said. "Brighten that sour face."
Agatha spat a spray of red.
"Really, dear, I know weddings are putrid things, but try not to look hostile."
Her mother nodded ahead.
"The elders already despise us. Don't give them more reason."
Agatha glanced at three wizened, bearded men in black top hats and knee-length grey cloaks, milling between seats and shaking hands. The length of their beards appeared to indicate their relative ages, with the eldest's funneling down past his chest. "Why do they have to approve every marriage?" Agatha asked.
"Because when the kidnappings kept happening, the elders blamed women like me," her mother said, picking dandruff from her hair. "Back then, if you weren't married by the time you finished school, people thought you were a witch. So the elders forced marriages for all those unwed."
She managed a wry smile.
"But even force couldn't make a man wed me."
Agatha remembered when no boy at school wanted her for the ball either, until... Suddenly she felt even grimmer.
"When the kidnappings continued, the elders softened their stance and approved marriages instead. But I still remember their terrible arrangements," said her mother, digging nails into her scalp. "Stefan suffered worst of all."
"Why? What happened to him?" Callis's hand dropped, as if she'd forgotten her daughter was listening.
"Nothing, dear. Nothing that matters any more."
"But you said..." Agatha heard her name called and spun to see Sophie waving her into a front row seat.
"Aggie, we're starting."
Side by side in the first pew, a few feet from the altar, Agatha kept waiting for Sophie to crack. But her friend clung to her smile, even as her father joined the priest at the altar. The fiddlers began the procession, and Jacob and Adam strewed roses down the aisle in matching white suits. After months of fighting her father, fighting for attention, fighting real life, Sophie had changed. "You and me, Aggie." All Agatha had ever wanted was to be enough for Sophie. For Sophie to need her as much as she needed Sophie. And now, at last, she'd won her happy ending. But, in her seat, Agatha didn't feel happy at all. Something was bothering her about this wedding. Something worming through her heart. Before she could pinpoint it, the fiddlers slowed their tune, everyone under the tent stood, and Honora waddled down the aisle. Agatha watched Sophie carefully, expecting her friend to finally betray herself, but Sophie didn't flinch. Even as she took in her new stepmother's bulbous hairdo, pudgy behind, and dress smudged with what looked like cake frosting.
"Dearest friends and family," the priest began, "we are gathered here to witness the union of these two souls."
Stefan took Honora's hand, and Agatha felt even more dismal. Her back hunched, her lips pouted. Across the aisle, her mother was glaring at her. Agatha sat up and faked a smile.
"In love, happiness comes from honesty, from committing to the one that we need," the priest continued.
Agatha felt Sophie gently take her hand, as if they both had everything they needed right here.
May you grow a love that fulfills you, a love that lasts ever after.
Agatha's palm started to sweat.
Because you chose this love. You chose this ending to your story.
Her hand was dripping now, but Sophie didn't let go.
And now, this ending is yours, eternally.
Agatha's heart jackhammered. Her skin burned up.
And if no one has any objections, then this union is sealed forever.
Agatha pitched forward, sick to her stomach.
I now pronounce you.
Then she saw it.
Man and...
Her finger was glowing. Brilliant gold. She let out a cry of shock. Sophie turned in surprise. Something flew between them, throwing them both to the ground. Agatha wheeled to feel another arrow graze her throat before she lunged away. She could hear children crying, chairs falling, feet stumbling as the mob stampeded for cover, dozens of golden arrows whizzing past, gouging holes in the tent. Agatha spun for Sophie, but the tent tore off its stakes, toppled over the shrieking crowd, and swallowed her, until she couldn't see anything but muffled shadows flailing behind the canvas. Breathless, Agatha crawled on all fours over a shattered altar, hands clawing through the mud and trampled garlands as arrows landed ahead with shearing rips. Who was doing this? Who would destroy a wedding? Agatha froze. Now her finger was shining even brighter than before. It can't be. She heard a girl's screams ahead, screams she knew. Sweating, shivering, Agatha skimmed under overturned chairs, shoving the last fringe of tent off her until she felt a blast of sunlight and scraped into the front garden, expecting carnage. But people were just standing there, silent, still, watching the sky fall of arrows from every direction. Arrows from the woods. Agatha shielded herself in horror, then realized the arrows weren't aimed at her. They weren't aimed at any of the villagers. No matter where they came from out of the woods, their shafts curved at the last second, tearing toward one and only one target.
Yay!
Sophie ran around her house, ducking and batting arrows away with her glass heels.
Agatha! Agatha, help!
But there was no time, for a shaft almost sliced off her head, and Sophie ran down a hill, fast as she could, arrows following her all the way.
Who would want me dead?
Sophie wailed to stained-glass martyrs and statues of saints. Agatha sat beside her in the empty pews. It had been 2 weeks since Sophie started hiding in the church, the only place where the arrows didn't pursue her. Again and again she tried to break out, but the arrows returned with vengeance, slashing from the woods, followed by spears, axes, daggers, and darts. By the third day, it was clear there would be no escape. Whoever wanted to kill her would wait as long as it took. At first, Sophie saw no reason to panic. The townspeople brought her food, taking heed of her fatal allergies to wheat, sugar, dairy, and red meat. Agatha brought her the herbs and roots she needed to make her creams, and Stefan brought assurances that he wouldn't re-wed until his daughter was brought home safe. With the townsmen uselessly combing the forest for the assassins, the town scroll branded Sophie the brave little princess, for taking the burden of yet another curse, while the elders ordered her statue be given a fresh coat of paint. Soon children clamoured once more for autographs. The village anthem was amended to "Blessed is our Sophie," and townsmen took turns keeping watch over the church. There was even talk of a permanent one-woman show in the theatre once she was out of danger.
"Laren Sophie, an epic 3-hour celebration of my achievements," Sophie raptured, smelling the sympathy bouquets that filled the aisle. "A bit of cabaret to stir the blood, a circus intermezzo with wild lions and trapeze, and a rousing rendition of I Am But a Simple Woman to close. Oh, Agatha, how I've longed to find my place in this stagnant, monotonous town. All I needed was a part big enough to hold me." Suddenly she looked worried. "You don't think they'll stop trying to kill me, do you? This is the best thing that's ever happened." But then the attacks got worse. The first night, firebombs launched from the woods and annihilated Belle's house, leaving her whole family homeless. On the second night, boiling oil flooded from the trees, immolating an entire cottage lane. In smouldering ruins, the assassins left the same message, burnt into the ground. "Give us Sophie." By the next morning, when the elders took to the square to calm rioting villagers, Stefan had already made it to the church. "It's the only way the elders and I can protect you," he told his daughter, bearing a hammer and padlocks. Agatha wouldn't leave, so he locked her in too.
"I thought our story was over," Sophie cried, listening to a mob of villagers outside chanting, "Send her back! Send her back!" She slumped in her seat.
"Why don't they want you? Why am I always the villain? And why am I always locked in?"
Next to her, Agatha gazed at a marble saint in a frieze above the altar, lunging for an angel. He stretched his strong arm, talked his chest as if he'd follow the angel wherever it went.
"Aggie?"
Agatha broke from her trance and turned. "You do have a way of making enemies."
"I tried to be good," Sophie said. "I tried to be just like you."
Agatha felt that sick feeling again, the one she'd been trying to keep down.
"Aggie, do something."
Sophie grabbed her arm.
"You always fix things."
"Maybe I'm not as good as you think," Agatha murmured and pulled away, pretending to polish her clump. In the silence, she could feel Sophie watching her.
"Aggie?"
"Yeah."
"Why did your finger glow?"
Agatha's muscles clenched. "What?"
"I saw it," said Sophie softly. "At the wedding."
Agatha threw her a glance. "Probably a trick of light. Magic doesn't work here."
"Right."
Agatha held her breath. She could feel Sophie thinking.
"But the teachers never relocked our fingers, did they?"
her friend said.
"And magic follows emotion. That's what they told us."
Agatha shifted. "So?"
"You didn't look happy at the wedding," Sophie said. "Are you sure something didn't make you upset? Upset enough to do magic?"
Agatha met her eyes. Sophie searched her face, seeing right through her.
"I know you, Agatha."
Agatha gripped the pew.
"I know why you were sad."
"Sophie, I didn't mean it," Agatha blurted.
"You were upset with my father," said Sophie, "for all he put me through."
Agatha goggled at her. She recovered and nodded. "Right,
Uh-huh. You got me.
At first I thought you'd done the spell to stop his wedding, but that doesn't make any sense now, does it?
Sophie said with a snort.
That would mean you sent the arrows for me.
Agatha croaked a laugh, trying not to look at her.
Just a trick of light, Sophie said. Like you said.
They sat in silence and listened to the chants.
Don't worry about my father. He and I'll be fine,
Sophie said.
The witch won't come back, Aggie. Not as long as we're friends.
Her voice was more naked than Agatha had ever heard it. Agatha looked up, surprised.
You make me happy, Agatha, Sophie said. It just took me too long to see it.
Agatha tried to hold her gaze, but all she could see was the saint above the altar, hand lunging towards her, like a prince, reaching for his princess.
You'll see. We'll come up with a plan, like always,
Sophie said, reapplying pink lipstick between yawns,
but maybe a little beauty nap first.
As she curled up on the pew like a cat, pillow to her stomach, Agatha saw it was her friend's favourite, stitched with a blonde princess and her prince embraced beneath the words, Ever After. But Sophie had revised the prince with her sewing kit. Now he had boxy dark hair, goonish bug eyes, and a black dress. Agatha watched her best friend fall into sleep a few breaths later, free from nightmares for the first time in weeks. As the chants outside the church grew louder, Send her back! Send her back! Agatha stared at Sophie's pillow, and her stomach wrenched with that sick feeling. The same feeling she felt looking at the storybook prints in her kitchen. The same feeling she felt watching a man and wife exchange vows. The same feeling she felt as she held Sophie's hand, growing stronger, stronger, until her finger had glowed with a secret so terrible, so unforgivable, that she'd ruined a fairy tale. For in that single moment, watching the wedding she'd never have, Agatha had wished for something she never thought possible. She wished for a different ending to her story, an ending with someone else. That's when the arrows came for Sophie. The arrows that wouldn't stop, no matter how much she tried to take her wish back.
Chapter 3. Breadcrumbs.
That night, they flattened Radley's house first, with a boulder lobbed over the trees, then the crooked clock tower, which tolled broken moans as screaming villagers fled through the square. Soon, whole lanes went up in splinters as parents clung to their children in wells and ditches, watching rocks fly across the moon like meteors. When the blitz ended at 4 in the morning, only half the town remained. The trembling villagers looked out at the theatre, illuminated in the distance, the lights on its red curtain rearranged, Sophie or die. While Sophie slept calmly through all this, Agatha sat trapped in the church, listening to the screams and thumps. Give them Sophie, and her best friend would die. Don't give them Sophie, and her whole town would die. Shame burnt her throat. Somehow she'd reopened the gates between the worlds, but to who? Who wanted Sophie dead? There had to be a way to fix this. If she'd reopened the gates, surely she could close them. First, she tried to make her finger glow again, focusing on her anger until her cheeks puffed anger at the assassins, anger at herself, anger at her stupid, unlit finger that looked even paler than before. Then she tried doing spells anyway to repel the raiders, which went about as well as expected. She tried praying to stained glass saints, wishing on